Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move. Life Conversations, the radio show, is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Hello there. My name is Michelle Brown Stafford, child prodigy mom and parental involvement activist, urging parents to get involved in their children's education. At the age of 13, our son, Stephen Stafford, became the youngest ever to enroll as a full-time regular student in Morehouse College's 150-year history. This occurred only after well-meaning educators failed to identify our son's gifts in the classroom. Knowing who our son was, my husband and I got involved and prevented Stephen from falling through the educational cracks. So parents, get involved. Stay involved. Your child's potential is definitely worth it.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you don't need to talk to me about sex.
Maybe you do control what I'm exposed to.
But maybe not.
Maybe I hear about sex every day.
In the media? From my friends?
Maybe while you're not talking to me about sex, everyone else is.
So talk to me. Tell me to wait to have sex.
Because you can influence me.
For help starting the conversation, visit forparents.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Life Conversations works with people to increase their organizational and individual potential by assisting them in identifying habits, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations that hinder their performance professionally and socially. Life Conversations is committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Of the spirit. That is the truth. Love will have the final word, no matter how you try and shape it, how you try and cover it, deny it, package it. Love will always have the final word. Now, the question is, are we going to allow for love to speak, to show up? Because, woo, if we ever need love, this is the time. And I'm not just talking about globally, because sometimes it's easy to talk about on a global level, society, we need to love one another. But no, it starts with self, and until we learn to love self, until we learn to be the giver and expressor of love, the expressor of love, the giver of love, the deliverer of love, then we won't see it out there. Trust love. Ricky Byers Beckwith. To find out more about her, you can go to her website. It is weletitbe.com. Weletitbe.com. Trust love. And talk about trust and love. Oh, Lord, I just love it when things just come together and all of the other stuff. And just know that. Just remind myself, trust love. Are you trusting love? I'm sure you are. And we're just getting stronger and stronger every moment, every day. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, good day to you, wherever you may be at this very moment in time. Thank you for tuning in to Life Conversations Radio, where change begins and you make a difference. You make a difference because you are that place where love gets to express itself. You are the answered prayer to somebody else's. You're the answer to other people's prayer. You make a difference because you exist. You're here to reveal that gift, to reveal the love, to reveal the truth, the harmony, to go through the process of life, to break him down and put him back together, and to break it up, and to be lifted up, to be tested, and then you can have your testimony. It's all part of this journey called life. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are listening to Ask Life Coach at AonLifeConversationsRadio.com. Yes, I am your host, Life Coach Ade. My guest is here, Paul Young. And if I planned in advance, if I just really sat down and say, let me find the perfect date to have Paul Young join us, I think I would have messed it up. I would never have got it right. But I'm so glad that I had a universal secretary, a universal receptionist, universal beings, angels, just taking care of what needs to be done. My only responsibility, my only obligation is to live in the moment, do what I need to do, allow God to take care of the rest, because my God, my God, my God. Woo! Life is good, is getting better. We are here Monday to Thursday, 12 to 1:30 p.m. And depending on how much, if we feel like playing a little bit longer, we do go to 2 o'clock. But right now, officially, it's 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern. And it's time to give you some announcements so we can jump into the conversation with Paul Young. And if you've read the book, I know you're ready for the conversation. And if you have any questions, we're taking your questions. The number is 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. Make sure you press 1 on your keypad. And we're also taking your questions on Ask Life Coach at a like page. Not fan page, like page. That's Ask Life Coach ADE like page. Yes, I got it right this time. So some quick announcements of upcoming guests. Tomorrow we have, who do we have tomorrow? Oh, let's do this. Let's go here. Multitasking as usual. I mean, I won't be myself if I'm not multitasking. No, I want Canada's. Okay. I know who's coming. So tomorrow we have Karen Hager. Wow, that loads up. And she's an intuitive guide. She's going to be here taking your calls and just reminding us, sharing with us that we have access to God, Creator, whatever name you want to call it, that power that is beyond definition, that divine intelligence. So she'll be connecting you with the God of your own understanding, even if you're feeling kind of stuck where you are. And then on Thursday, we have a returning guest, Sherry Cortland. She was here about 2 months ago. She's coming back, and we're talking about living in the here and now. Living in the here and now. You can't live in the past. You can't live in the future. You can only live now. Right now is where all your power lies. So just bookmark the show. Come back regularly. You can find us on Facebook and all the other stuff. We also ask that you share the show with your friends, your lovers, your coworkers, everybody that you know. Even your pets. Tell your pet to listen, because I told you, they know the truth. It's humans, we get it confused. So get your pet to listen to the conversation. Even they'll be healed. Try it. Now it's time. What else do I need to tell you as we jump into it? I'm ready to jump into this conversation because everything that has happened up to this point has prepared me for this conversation. Life is good. It's getting better. Paul Young, let me tell you a little bit about him. And then we'll go to him and... Paul Young, he's the author of the book, The Shack, and it came out, I think, 6 years ago? Was born a Canadian and, along with 3 young siblings, was raised among a Stone Age tribe by his missionary parents in the highlands of what was New Guinea. The family returned to Canada, where his father pastored a number of churches for various denominations. By the time he entered Canada, Canadian Bible College, Paul had attended a dozen schools. Wow. He completed his undergraduate degree in religion at Wana Pacific College in Portland, Oregon. No multitasking, just read. While in Oregon, Paul attended seminary and met and married Kim, his wife. Of course, if you married her, it'd be his wife. Together, they celebrate. This is funny. I laugh when I read that. I'm going to ask them what it means about this. They celebrate the wastefulness of grace with their 6 children, 2 daughters-in-law, and now 2 grandchildren. And that probably is updated. Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm good, Addie. How are you?
I am very well. Before I forget, let me ask you this: what you mean by the wastefulness of grace? What does that mean?
Well, you know, to me, grace doesn't have an end to it. And it's just like this universe. We live in this universe, and if you know cosmology or astronomy at all, we hardly show up as a blip. I mean, it's just this expanding, unbelievably mass. And the question is, why does God need such a huge amount of space in order to create us? And there just seems to be so much wastefulness. Most of it we won't ever see. And in terms of what's happening, you know, in the nebula and in black holes and dark matter and all that kind of stuff. But I'm at the coast of Oregon right now, and I'm looking out at the ocean and how big it is. But I'm also looking at all these different shades of green. I mean, how many shades of green do you need? And and my sense is that, you know, God is a being who loves to lavish, loves to waste in the best possible sense. And that I think grace is the same. No matter how deeply we fight it, resist it, work against it, we can't seem to use it up. And so we live in this wastefulness of grace.
I know if I try to find the perfect date to bring you on, and I said, you know, let's bring him on this day, I think I would have messed it up. I'm glad that, you know, you're just here at the perfect time. So I want to ask you this question. I read a little bit about you, and I look forward to asking you this question, because there's something on your website that really speaks to me. And but if you touch on it, then I won't have to read it. But if you don't, I'll still read it. If you don't, I'll read it. But the next question I want to ask you really is, who are you? From your perspective, who are you? Who is Paul Young?
That is a great and involved question. You know, I am I'm the result of my parents deciding to have a child. I'm beyond that. I am someone who participated with them in the creation of a being that would never cease to exist. So my parents got to participate with God to create a human being, someone who would never cease to exist. And so I am a son, and I am a father, and I am a grandfather, and I am a husband, and I am all of these things that I do. But beyond that, you know, every human being is a story. Every human being is a universe. And I think it's an expanding universe. People talk about, you know, multiple universes and all that, and I say, well, yeah, I'm with that. I think we have almost 7 billion of these universes, you know, interrelating and coexisting. They're just not independent. And,
right.
You know, and so there is a depth to our own souls that we don't even begin to understand. And as we are involved in each other's lives, we get to find out some of the depth. I think partly why love is not infatuation is because love is based on knowing, and knowing takes some time, and knowing definitely takes relationship, and then it's knowing that actually grows in love that just expands to encompass that knowing.
Yes. So relationship is the seed, or is the, well, I guess it's the manure to help us grow love within ourselves. If we can learn to just be within the relationship,
also,
the love will grow.
Well, and relationship is also where we get most of our damage, you know, which kind of makes sense. So we are hurt by and through and in relationship, and we tend to then want to close ourselves off to relationship, not realizing that it's also in relationship that our healing will come. And so it's because trust is at the center of the healing process, and trust is one of those things that we don't like very well, you know, because we've been hurt. We've been hurt in relationships. So why would we want to ever trust again? And yet it's through trust that our healing comes.
That's right. And, you know, we don't want to love again or trust again because it was too painful. But until we're really ready and allow ourselves to release that protectiveness, if you will, and trust something much bigger than the human relationship, it'll be challenging to experience what love is, the essence of what love is, and know that it's much more than an emotion. You know, and, you know, I was saying just before I asked you the question, who are you? And when I look at what you have on your website, you know, and as an author, and you're so much more than that. And I've interviewed a lot of different people, and you know, people put different they write their bio or talk about themselves in different ways. But there was something about yours that really gets me, because when I read it, I was looking at it this morning just before the show. It's like, wow, this is something we don't always talk about, and or it's kind of underneath. And I want to read it because I just feel. Right now, when we talk about relationship, when we talk about trust, this is really what's going on. This is what people are feeling in so many levels, and we're trying to break free of it. And so on your website, it says, the facts that I read about you, it says, these are some of the facts of my life, that he was born in Canada and all the other stuff. But they don't begin to tell the real story. That would take much more room than is available here. The journey has been both incredible and unbearable, a desperate grasping after grace and wholeness. These facts don't tell you about the pain of trying to adjust to different cultures, of life losses that were almost too staggering to bear, of walking down railroad tracks at night in the middle of winter screaming into the windstorm, of living with an underlying volume of shame so deep and loud that it's constantly threatened any sense of sanity, of dreams not only destroyed but obliterated by personal failure, of hope so tenuous that only the trigger seems to offer a solution. These few facts also do not speak to the potency of love and forgiveness, the arduous road of reconciliation, the surprises of grace and community, of transformational healing, and the unexpected emergence of joy. When I read that, that's the human plight. I mean, I don't think there's anybody on this planet that can't identify with this. But in this world, maybe Western worlds, maybe, but there's a tendency to always put forward the polished self and pretend that we're not dealing with this. And as I sit with what I've just read, and I know the book, The Shack, was about you going through all those experiences and willing to go deep. What got you through those moments when you said walking down railroad tracks at night in the middle of winter screaming? What got you through those moments when you just felt like there was no way out?
Yeah. You know, I'm not about the polished self. That's not what I'm about, because I'm very ordinary and I'm no different than anybody else. And so, you know, authenticity means a whole lot more to me than performance anymore. And what got me through those moments is a whole bunch of different things at different times, because, you know, grace shows up with very many different faces depending on where you're at and what you need. And so sometimes it could have been, you know, somebody who just simply put their arm around your shoulder. Sometimes it was a song that you heard that went into the precious places without asking for permission. And sometimes it was a rainstorm that caught you off guard, or you got to see the ocean after you hadn't seen it for a long time, and it was just enough. Or sometimes it was the sense of a presence, in terms that, you know, there was a God somewhere who was good all the time, maybe, perhaps. And sometimes it was something you read. And, you know, sometimes it was a dream that you had. There was always something in the moment. And it was usually connected to a sense of belonging or relationship or the possibility of love, or that you weren't alone, or that somebody understood something, you know. And so there is no formula to this. And I think every human being is such a magnificent creation, such an intricately made masterpiece that every human being then gets uniquely damaged. And that's why we cannot compare our pain one with another. I mean, there are certain similarities, but our pain is uniquely our own. And we can't also compare really our healing process with one another. There are certain similarities, but our process will be uniquely our own because of the uniqueness of our own soul. And this
yes.
intricately made thing, I believe that God is the only one who is wise enough and gentle enough and kind enough to begin to unravel the damage without becoming an abuser. And and I believe that. I believe it in my own experience. I've seen it in the experience of those whose my life has intersected with. And it took me 50 years to actually trust that there was a God who was actually good all the time and involved in the details of my life. But because trust is the big issue, and especially for those of us who've been, you know, significantly brutalized or damaged. And
yes.
and religion has always offered kind of a very poor substitute. And and that's performance, you know, that you can, if you do the right thing enough right times, you can win the affection and the approval. You can win the relationship that will actually bring healing to you. And you know, trying to please a God is not at all the same thing as learning to trust a God.
I know, that's right. So let's go back a little bit, because we all have unique experiences, but you had an interesting journey growing up. Tell us about your story growing up with your parents as missionaries.
Well, yeah, you know, I was 10 months old when my father and my mother and I moved into the highlands of what was then a Dutch colonial country called Netherlands, New Guinea. And we moved into the highlands, which was a place that had never even seen a white person before. And these were folks, a large tribe. We had 40 to 60,000 people over 100 square miles. And with a unique language that nobody knew other than themselves. And I was 10 months old, so that became my world. They were Stone Age technology. They had no metal. They were warring people. They were spirit worshipers, animists. And they were ritualistically cannibalists. So if I grew up thinking everybody grew up around cannibals, you know. I found out that they do. They're just different kinds. That was my world. And my parents were part of a generation that didn't know they had baggage. Part of a generation in terms of missions that were trying to do the right thing and believe that, you know, if they were obedient to the call of God, that God would take care of the details, like the children. So my generation, many of us, got pretty obliterated for the sake of the gospel. So, you know, there were beautiful things about the way I grew up. There were horrible things about the way that I grew up. My father was a very angry young man. You know, he's a human being. He's a mixed bag, like all of us. And he had come from an absolutely devastated history himself and had never dealt with it. So he had a sizable amount of fury that he kept locked up, except on certain occasions, which involved the disciplining of his firstborn son. I did not have any sense that I ever met the expectations of my father, ever. And so it took me, you know, because then I projected that upon the face of God, and it took me 50 years to wipe the face of my father off the face of God. And so that, you know, that was part of my great sadness that shows up in the book. Another part of my great sadness was sexual abuse that started inside the tribal culture at about age 4 and a half and was a consistent presence in terms of my childhood. And then at age 6, I was shipped out to boarding school, Christian missionary boarding school, and the big boys would come at night and molest the little boys. So that became just part of the pattern. And that's where when I wrote this book, and you have to understand that I never thought that it would be published. It was never intended to be published. I've never published anything, so it didn't even cross my mind. And I made 15 copies at Office Depot, and it did everything that I wanted it to do. I wrote it for my six children and my wife and my friends. And a writer out of Nashville, when the book eventually was published, she wrote, I don't know your history or your backstory, but my sense is that Mackenzie, who's the main character, or that Missy, his daughter, represents something murdered in you as a child, probably your innocence. Mm. And Mackenzie is you as an adult trying to deal with that. And that's really true. And that's where the metaphor of the shack as the house on the inside, the house that people help you build, the house of the human soul, the house of the human heart. And that's where that metaphor arises as the place where we then hide all of our addictions and store our secrets. And that's where we keep all our shame and our pain, and it's held together by lies. And for a lot of us, we did not get good help building the house of our own soul. And so we have to find some way to win the affection and the approval that might bring us healing. And so there's all kinds of different ways that we do that. For me, I just became a performer. You know, I built a facade outside the shack that I could paint as fast as I could pick up people's expectations. And that's what I did. I wasn't doing it to try to be, you know, duplicitous or false or dishonest. I was trying to figure out what other people wanted me to be and then tried to do that perfectly, thinking that would one day win me the affection and the approval that would heal my broken heart. So that's sort of the metaphorical big picture.
You talked about the little girl that was murdered in the book. What part of you was murdered as a child?
I think my whole childhood was. You know, I have a few memories of childlikeness in terms of that part of my life, but for the most part, you know, I was dealing with adult kinds of things without the capacity to do so. You know, children faced with abuse or trauma or whatever, they find a way to survive. And to do it, they have to become adults in certain respect, in terms of their thinking, in terms of their safety mechanisms, in terms of their, you know, security systems. Everything becomes about staying safe. And it's not a childlike thing. Children who are healthy, you know, don't have, you know, agendas and 5-year plans and you know, aren't trying to manipulate people and aren't thinking about tomorrow. They're in the moment. They're in the day. And I just didn't experience that. So Missy represents just a lost child, my own child. And so, it took me 50 years to become a child again. And that was not an easy journey, because even as a child, as you adapt certain ways to stay safe, those ways save your life on many levels.
Yes.
But those same mechanisms and systems that you adapt to stay safe and that save your life, those very things eventually become the inhibitors of relationship. They become the things that keep you hidden, that keep you behind closed walls, that keep other people shut out. And someday,
can you just unpack that, because that is very true. When you talk about what you use as safety mechanism is what ends up keeping people out. Can you just talk more about
that? Sure. Let me use an example that all of us, I think, will understand. The keeping of secrets is a way to stay safe. It is one of the most profoundly inhibiting systems that we develop. So the way that I talk about it is that inside the inner house, the shack, is where we store all of our secrets. But what we don't understand is how secrets absolutely trap us. So on the one hand, I don't want anybody in the shack. I don't want them to find out about my secrets, to find out about my addictions, to find out about my shame, to find out about what's happened to me that I feel responsible for. I don't want anybody to know any of that stuff. So I keep my secrets. And what I do is, the reason that I don't want anybody to find out is because I'm terrified. At a real base level, I'm terrified that if they find out, they will remove from my world the little bits and scraps of affection and approval and light that I think I've managed to earn. So I'm out here trying my best to do this right, trying to be the right person for what I think you want me to be. And I'm terrified that if you find out what I'm really like, you will withdraw the little bits and pieces of affection, approval, the things that would actually bring me some life and light and love. Now, here's the trap. When people actually come into my life because of God's kindness, because of their participation, whatever, and they begin to offer me things like kindness and forgiveness and care and consideration and approval and love, I don't believe them because they don't know the secrets. So I'm trapped. I don't want you to find out about my secrets because you're going to take away the little bits and pieces of light that I've hoarded into the corner here. But if you bring me the very things that would actually heal my heart, I will push you away because I don't believe you. At best, I think I fooled you because you don't know the secrets. If you knew the secrets, you wouldn't be offering me these things. So then we've got a system of secrets, a system of staying safe that help us stay alive. Because there was a time in my childhood where if those things had been known, the beatings would have been more horrific than they were, you know, and I was afraid. And so those systems kept me alive, but at some point it's those very systems that now lock me out of the very things that would bring healing to my heart. And that's just one of them. We've got a bunch of them. Yeah. So we are
if you're just,
secrets we keep.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just saying we are as sick as the secrets we keep. You know, it's just one of the mechanisms by which we
you
stay
said
safe.
We're as safe as the secret we keep. Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yep.
We are as safe as the secret we keep. Oh, Lord.
And we are as sick as the secrets we keep.
Yes, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. My guest is Paul Young, the author of The Shack. He's working on another project, and we'll talk about that before the end of the conversation. His website address is Wind Rumors. That's WindRumors.com. You can find out more about him. We're taking your calls. The number is 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. If you have a question or comment for Paul, make sure you press 1 on your keypad. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Paul, I want to ask you how the secrets that you kept, how we showed up in your relationship, and how you were able to literally blow up the shack so you could really express the truth of who you really are. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. And once again, number 347-426-3346, 347-426-3346.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life. Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many cheeks? Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many cheeks in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you think depression is all in a person's head, you're right. It's a brain illness. And like other illnesses, it has symptoms. A person suffering from depression might feel sad, empty, or numb. They might sleep more or less, eat a lot, or not at all, or show little interest in participating in ordinary activities. Mood swings, including anger and sadness, are common, They're often tired and have a hard time concentrating or making decisions. Depression can make those who suffer from it feel hopeless. It can even lead to suicide. If you see the symptoms of depression, get that person to a doctor. With medical help, depression can be treated and suicide can be prevented. Learn how to stop depression from taking another life. Call SAVE, Suicide Awareness Voices of Education, 1-888-511-SAVE, on the web at save.org.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio.
Giving a voice back to the community. To the community. To the community. To the community.
Yes, indeed. We are bringing program shows, guests, and hosts that are helping you to activate your voice, your throat chakra, to express your power, to express your gift, and not be ashamed or afraid to reveal your secrets, because when you do, there'll be people waiting in line saying, "You too? Oh, God, that touches me. You set me free." And Paul can give you stories and stories of stories, emails and letters of how people write to him. But before we go into that, Paul, before the break, I was asking you, you know, the process of your secrets, how he showed up in your adulthood and in your relationship and what it took for you to say, "That's it, I've had enough." Could you tell us about that?
I wish it was that easy. You know, a lot of us, it's one thing to say, well, you know, I finally got to the stage where I realized how screwed up I was, so I went and found some help. You know, I wish that was true. There are some of us that are so bent up and twisted up that we have to get caught. And getting caught is grace, you know, because... And you have to understand, my pursuit of a relationship with God has been a consuming pursuit my entire life. And part of it is, you know, I come from a very religious background, so a lot of it was couched in religious kinds of language and performance. So what do I need to do? How much do I need to pray before you'll heal me? You know, how much, you know, and you're hoping that God will heal you in a way that nobody else will find out about it, you know, or that you're hoping that there's such a thing as extreme soul makeover, you know? Send me to Disney World and fix me by the time I get
back.
Call
me next week.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good one.
Put me out and fix me. You know, give me a red or a blue pill, you know? So,
right.
But that's just not the way it works. We're too intricately made and we're too uniquely damaged. And so for me, you know, I'm a good performer. Turns out that I'm actually smart and creative, which didn't help. It actually empowered my ability to perform. And so, you know, I use the image of building a facade outside the shack, something that I could paint. You know, I could look at you and say, "What do you want me to be?" I can do that because I had nothing on the inside to live out from. So you become those who live from the outside in, and you become a different person in every different situation. And you use lies to try to keep the balance in order so that everything doesn't fly apart. So you become, you know, a storyteller. People ask me, "Have you always been a storyteller?" And I say, "Yeah, but it used to be called lying," you know. And so, you know, it was one of those situations where I kept saying, "Why don't you heal me?" But I still, even, you know, married to Kim, we have six children. Our sixth child had just been born. She still has no clue about the kind of damage that's on the inside of my heart. I'm doing the best that I know how, but it's just wearing me out. And I'm being as good a husband as I know how. You know, I'm reading the books and trying to do the right thing. And it's, again, not because it's coming from a restored wholeness. It's coming from the need to perform. And there's a sense that performance, you're trying to do the right thing. You know, I mean, you're trying to love without condition. You're trying to be kind. You're trying to be patient. But it's all being produced by self-effort. And it just saps the very strength of existence, and it, you know, reduces the colors of life down to a few shades. But what happened was, let me put it this way. In the book, the main character, Mackenzie, spends a weekend in the shack, and everything happens inside that weekend. That weekend represents 11 years for me. You know, but when I'm writing a story for my kids, I don't want to write an 11-year book, you know? So I took my experience and I squeezed it down into a weekend. But it was 11 years. It started in January of 1994, January 4th, 1994. And basically, I see it as the reconstruction of my heart, that tearing it to shreds, including the facade. You see what the fundamental thing was, I had put my hope in my ability to perform. I put my hope in my ability to do it right, not just for people, but for God. And I was hoping that if I could just do it right, maybe some kind of transformation would take place, that piece of wood that was outside the shack would one day become a real boy.
And the thing is, when you talk about putting your life has been around being to perform, then everything you do is based on performing, and you're always on. It's hard to find that place to just go to the green room or go back home and rest in the hotel, because you always have to be on, because it's about trying to win love and approval, right?
And not just having to be on all the time. The addictions still exist. They still are wending their way. The poisons that are involved with them are still affecting other things. So there's parts of this that, as hard as you try in your performance, that are still not in your control. That's what addictions are, things that are not in your control. And so the addictions are still going on, but you're keeping those hidden at the same time as you want to do the right thing. There's part of you that just wants to be whole, and I'm praying and begging God, come on, you know, what do I have to do so that you can heal this, that you can put some integration? But at the same time, I don't want anybody in. I don't want anybody to know about me. I don't want to allow any sense of community. I want this to happen, you know, sort of incognito. Because I'm already so ashamed, right? The sexual abuse stuff and all the history of lying and all that, and the addictions, I'm already so ashamed. You know what I did is my life was an ocean of shame covered up by just a thin, tiny layer of perfectionist performance. And if somebody came along and they start putting holes down through that little thin layer of performance, up would come the shame. And there was usually one of two choices at that point. You either fight. You learn to hide knives inside words. You learn to make it somebody else's fault. Or you run. You know, you leave. Mm. You go try to go somewhere and start over again. Try one more time. So, you know, Kim's entrance into my life was really the grace of God that set a trap. Because Kim comes from a very healthy family compared to mine. And she's North Dakota, Minnesota, salt of the earth. You know, these people, they're the same all the time. You know, what's with that? You know, I didn't know that was possible. But these people were the same. And I was highly attracted to that. And at the same time, I didn't let it come into my world. These were people that loved loud and fought loud and forgave loud and, you know, genetically enhanced to all talk loudly at the same time and understand each other. You know, and I came from a little religious family. We hide everything and we lie about almost everything. And, you know, we have to have an order of service when we get together. And so it was just two totally different worlds. And she is not – let me tell you one thing. This will help somebody out there. Here's one of the most powerful things I learned about shame. Shame destroys your ability to distinguish between a observation and a value statement. Let me say that again, then I'll give you an example, and that'll help. Shame destroys your ability to distinguish between an observation and a value statement. When we first got married, Kim would say, she would say these horrible things to me, like, Paul, don't mix the colors with the whites. Can you believe that? You know, she's talking about laundry, right? Now, what did I hear her say? I heard her say, Paul, I don't know why I married such a loser of a human being as you. Shame had destroyed my ability to distinguish between a value statement and an observation. She was making observations. She was trying to help me learn something. But remember, I have a thin layer of a perfectionist performance. It was all or nothing. And when she poked a hole down through that, when she was saying, you know, you don't know how to do laundry, I heard her say, you are a loser of a human being. I don't know why I'm even involved with you. You know, and so that is one of the most powerful things that shame does. You know, it just drops you into the hole that has been there forever. And until those things come to the surface and you begin to deal with them, and it was what I had to do. It took me 11 years. But if it wasn't for Kim, it could have taken me 50 years. You know, she...
And how she helped you in the process. Well, did she find out you were having an affair, or you told her?
No, she found out. And that's the catalyst. January 4th, 94, I get a phone call at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's Kim, and she says, I'm waiting for you at your office, and I know. And my facade came crashing down, because what she found out was I was in a 3-month affair with one of her best friends. I was committing adultery. And that became the catalyst. That's when everything came crashing down, and I had to make the choice whether to face her or kill myself. Because once the facade comes down, this thing that you've put your whole hope in, what's left is just the shock and all the shame and everything else. And so to this day, it's kind of a miracle to me, but I have no recollection of making it from one side of the town to where my office was, and I drove in, and Kim was already there, and she'd already torn the place up. Part of what saved my life, and when we talk about Kim, part of what saved my life was her fury. She was so incredibly furious. She had no idea. The betrayal was monumental, and she came at me with every piece of fire she had. And part of the reason that I dealt with all the crap in my life is because of the intensity of her fury. And it was part of what saved my life. Now, about 4 hours into that first conversation, in which she had just, I mean, she'd already torn the office up, literally, and came at me with it, you know, every blazing gun she could find. About 4 hours into the conversation, I said this to her. I said, Kim, if we're going to do this, I have to tell you every secret that I have, because secrets have been killing me my whole life. And naively, she said, "Bring it on." And it took me the next 4 days. It took me 4 days to tell my wife all my secrets. And at the end of those 4 days, she was destroyed. She was destroyed, and she said to me, I will never believe another word that comes out of your mouth the rest of your life. And I believed that. And I didn't know what else to do, so I went to the Yellow Pages and started with the A's and found a group called Agape Youth and Family Services and called them up, because they specialized in sexual abuse histories. And I went and sat down in front of a man who became my friend, Scott Mitchell, and I said to him, for the first time in my life, to a human being, I said these words: "Can you help me? Can you help me?" And he says, "Yeah, I can, but it's going to take a year and a half." And I said, "I'm in." He said, "Yeah. Everybody, when they sit where you are, they always say they're in, but after a couple months, they'll feel better about themselves. They'll feel a little bit more in control, and they'll want to control their world again, and they'll bail out just before the really hard stuff." And one of the best things I ever did, I said to him, because I was at the bottom, I said, "You know what, Scott, I don't even trust myself to have any clue about when I'm done, so I'm not leaving until you tell me that I'm done." And we worked, and I worked with him specifically for almost a year. It took 11 years for Kim and I to heal. which I thought was never going to happen. I thought, you know, she's never going to believe a thing that comes out of my mouth the rest of my life, and this is just the way it's going to be. And why should she? And why should she take the risk when I had so brutally destroyed the trust that had been there? Why?
Right.
And so, you know, part of the miracle of this whole destruction of the facade, the dismantling of the shack and the rebuilding of it, part of that miracle was that a few years ago, she says to in front of me, to my friends who all knew, because we didn't make my failure, my moral failure, my adultery, we didn't make that the new secret, you know, so everybody knew. But she said to them a few years ago, she says, you know, people would come and they'd say to me, someday you'll forgive. And I would say to them, you don't know me. Mm. And she said, but I never thought I would ever say this in my life. But it was all worth it. Mm. See, and what she's saying is not, look, betrayal and adultery are things that are worth it. That's not what she's saying. She's saying, there is nothing so dead that God can't grow something in it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing so broken that God can't heal it, or so lost that he doesn't know where it is. And she and I are the best we have ever been, and better than we could have been, unless I've dealt with this crap. But, and, you know, it's a miracle, and the forgiveness is complete. You know, we left at the end of 11 years, the end of 2004, I was one of the healthiest people that I knew. I don't have any addictions. I'm not talking pornography and all those yucky, terribly insidious things. I'm talking gold-chained addictions like pleasing my father, or like doing something great for God, or those things that will drive you into the ground faster and more subtly than the obvious addictions. And I don't have any secrets. I mean, I literally, there's nothing in my life that my wife or my children do not know. And let me tell you, it is so much easier living this way. And I'm the same person, whether I'm standing here looking at the ocean through this window, talking to you on the phone, or when I'm here working by myself or with my grandbabies, which I have five and one on the way now, and with playing with my kids or with my friends or in a hotel room by myself, I'm the same person. And I didn't know that was possible. So there's a lot of things that I know that I didn't know. And one of them is I know what grace looks like.
Right.
You know, and I know I know that there is fury inside of grace. And it's the fire of that fury that in part is what saves us. And,
so to somebody who is listening to you, and maybe you've even activated their shame, maybe you've activated a memory that they've forgotten, and they are ready to let it go, but they're afraid, they're scared in the you-know-what out of them right now. What would you say to somebody saying, you know, I'm ready to blow up my shack. I can't go in there anymore. It's not serving me.
Well, two things. One is, you know, stop pointing a finger at anybody else. I mean, own it. Even if it was something done to you, own it. It's yours to deal with. And because one of the ways that we don't hit the bottom is that we still point a finger. If I had pointed a finger at Kim and said, you know, some of this is your stuff, I mean, I would have been gone. And but the other thing is, look around and find somebody you trust. Even if it's a professional counselor, somebody, and let them in. You cannot do this by yourself. I believe that we are created in the image of a God who has never done anything by himself. That's why I love the Trinity. That means that there was other-centered, self-giving love from the very beginning. And that gives me a basis for understanding both relationship and real love. And so I don't think we're designed to do this by ourselves. We're definitely not designed to do it in isolation and independently. You've got to let somebody in that space with you. And that's the risk, you know, because it comes down to trust. And trust is the thing that is so hard for us. You know, I didn't trust anybody. And when you don't trust anybody, you only resort to the one that you do. Even if you don't love yourself, you still will trust yourself over somebody else. And you'll still fall back into the systems and the security measures and everything else that you've set up to keep safe. And the thing about living in that kind of fear is that to the degree that you live in that fear is to the degree you don't know you're loved. And you can't know you're loved in isolation. Real love requires an other. And so that's part of it. You know what? There is no shame in the process, at least not from God's point of view. We're the ones that drag it all along and do it to each other. But God, I don't believe, ever uses guilt, condemnation, shame, or judgment to accomplish good things. And it's not necessary. Those things can never produce any kind of right and whole heart. So I just think the beginning place is to begin to let someone else into that space. You know what? I can tell you this. Part of what saved my wife, Kim, you know, she's the main reason that I'm here today and I'm alive. And part of what saved her was her friend Mary Kay. And Mary Kay walked with Kim every day for over a year, sometimes twice a day, sometimes three times a day. And Kim would fume and cuss and rant and rave and just get it out. And not in any time during that time did Mary Kay ever say to her, no, it's been 9 months or it's been 11 months. It's time for you to get past this. Not once. She was just there with her. And that's what you want. We need somebody just to be there with us.
Yes, yes, yes. I so would love to have a conversation with your wife, you know, to just be able to share how she was able to come from that place. But I'll send you an email. Hopefully we can get to do that. But one last thing I want to ask you around this is I was watching an interview about you, and you said now you actually in a place where, I mean, I think the interview was done several years ago, but you realize that joy is now stayed. You were telling a friend of yours that joy
is a constant companion.
Go ahead.
See, here's what happened. 2005 clicks over, you know, the reconstruction of the shack. And 2005 was the year I turned 50. It was also the year that I felt, okay, I'm ready to do this, whatever this was that Kim asked me to do, which was to, she said, would you someday as a gift for our kids just write something? Because I've always written gifts for friends and family. And she said, would you just write something that puts in one place how you think as a gift for our kids. So that was the year. 2005 was the year that I wrote the first manuscript for the shack and gave it to them for Christmas. And but 2005, joy showed up as a constant companion, which I didn't know was a possibility. I'd never prayed for it because I didn't know it was a possibility. So I'm, over the course of a few months, I'm waiting for joy to, you know, slip out the back door, because prior to this, joy had never spent the night, you know. The next morning, everything would be horrible. So I'm going, what is this? So about 6 months into this, I'm talking to a friend of mine who's an artist, and I said, it's kind of like we're at breakfast, and it's me and Thad and Joy. And I'm going, kind of pointing in Joy's direction, going, Thad, for 6 months, Joy has been a constant companion. And he asked the obvious question, which I hadn't even thought of. So what happened 6 months ago that would make any difference? And I'm thinking back, and then I realized, oh, my goodness. At the beginning of 05, I finally was healthy enough as a human being to make a very simple decision. And that simple decision rippled through the rest of my life, and I hadn't even realized it. And here's the decision. I'd made the decision to stop, as I call it, future tripping, and stay inside the grace of just one day. And part of that process was I got into the place where I realized I spend so much energy on imaginations of the future that don't even exist. You know, what will happen if I lose my job? What am I going to do next week when I go out looking for work and they turn me down? What am I going to do when the rent check comes due? What is going to happen when my kids get these diseases? What happens if I die? What are they going to say at my funeral? I mean, all these imaginations that have no substance at all. They don't exist. And what I was doing as I was taking today's grace, which I think we all get grace for one day. I don't know if it's a Jewish thing, you know, goes from 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. or I don't know if it's a, for me, it's when I go to sleep and when I wake up. But you get grace for one day, just for one day. And when you stay inside that day, you can hear the voice of God and you can sense the presence of God. And but what I've done most of my life is I've taken today's grace and I've gone and tried to spend it on controlling things that don't exist. And then I would drag all of those things that I was worried and fretting about and that freaked me out, because in those imaginations I never saw God anyway. But I drag him back into the present and then tried to control the world in the present so that those imaginations wouldn't happen. And I was in this constant wasted space. And I had come to the place, and that's part of becoming a child too. You know, you don't have if you don't have someone in your life you can trust, what else are you going to do? You're going to try to control your world. That's what you're going to try to do. You know, and fear is not knowing you're loved. So, and I wrote about it, and in a blog I wrote. In fact, it's on the website somewhere. I read Joy's blog the other day, and Joy wrote, in 2005, Paul started to become a constant companion rather than an occasional acquaintance. It wasn't Joy that was leaving. It was me. It was me running into imaginations that don't even exist and then trying to draw them back into the present to control my environment so that the imaginations that don't exist wouldn't occur. And it was such a huge waste of time. So one of the things I talk about anymore for myself is I just want to stay inside the grace of one day. Everything else is an imagination. I don't even know if I'll be alive tomorrow. You know, some cell in my brain could go sideways today or tonight, and some truck could come across the center line, or who knows? There's no guarantees, but I do have today. I have today. I am present to this day. This is where God lives with me, in this day. And in the present, in the presence of God, there is fullness of joy. That's a scripture.
I am so grateful for you. I thank you. I'm grateful for Betty connecting you with Life Conversations Radio and the work you're doing and helping us start to walk that path where joy can be a constant companion for each and every one of us, because I believe it's our birthright. And we just got to be willing to do the work. We just got to be willing to let it, really. So thank you so much. Anything you want to share with the listeners before you go, where you're speaking, whatever?
You know, whatever. It's, if you go to Wind Rumors, you'll find whatever I have there. I'm not really good at it, but it's there. And, you know, the last thing is that what we're really talking here is about participation. Participation is a word of relationship. God won't heal us apart from our participation, but he's not going to just do it to us. And God doesn't heal us because he wants to use us. God heals us because he loves us and then invites us to play. And so this is, you know, Addy, I'm grateful for what you do. You know, what I do is of no greater significance in and of itself than the mom who gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning, dog dead tired, to take care of her sick little baby. You know, that is in a sense on a scale of magnificence way beyond anything that is done by this book or anything else. My playing with my grandbaby is of greater and more immense significance. But we all get to participate, and that's the joy of this, the participation relationship.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Paul Young. I appreciate you, and thank you for being an example of what real participation looks like.
That's desperation meets grace, you know? That's what it is.
That's right. That's me.
Blessings to you, brother.
Thank you so much. We're soon getting ready for, it's 1 o'clock, for Celestial Moon. But we're going to take a break and just let you digest that. You know, as you know, I'm always having questions, and I had so many. But it's like I would never stop asking questions. I'm a student of life. And what Paul just shared, I'm so filled up, full up, inspired, and it's beyond words when you connect with somebody that's so passionate about life and passionate about love, passionate about God. For me,
It's what I live for. And we are all on this journey together. And Paul is definitely giving me more ammunition to blow up my shack. Because I have some shacks. I got some stuff that I'm hiding and think people see. They won't like me. They will say, oh, really, you? It's time to blow that up, and I'm going to do it. This is all part of the process. We're going to take a quick break. As a matter of fact, we're going to play a song, I Have Forgiven by State of Man, because it's really about forgiveness. Do you have the courage to free yourself from yourself? Now, when I say free yourself from yourself, one of the things, I mean, so many things I was writing down here, and I've always said this, Paul saying, you cannot do it alone. You won't do it alone. He talked about his wife, Kim, and the friend, Mary Kay, who supported her, didn't judge her, didn't say you should get over it. Time will heal. She walked with Kim. So whatever it is you're dealing with, and if you're in a place where you're like, I don't have no issues, I have nothing to deal with, good for you. Be an example. Be the person who walks with somebody who's got the shame, who's living in the shack, afraid to come out. We need each other. We need to support each other in this journey. And when we start supporting each other on this journey from a place of love, from a place of understanding, of just listening, then we will see the love that we're looking for out there. We'll see it in politics. We'll see it in religion. We'll see it in school. But we got to start with one another. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to do Celestial Moment. This is State of Man, I Have Forgiven. Just the perfect, perfect song. It's about forgiveness. It's about forgiveness and being willing to live inside the grace of one day. Stop future tripping. I love it. It will be right back.
Since you've been gone away, I prayed every day to come back.
Given, not love is not just what you say, it is what you do. Love is action. Love is freedom. To find out more about State of Man, their website address is stateofmanmusic.com. stateofmanmusic.com. Sometimes it's easy to give the love. How easy is it to receive the love? How easy is it to open up, to be loved, to say, I need help. I need your support without feeling shameful. Life Conversations Radio is committed to bringing you
guests and hosts who are supporting you on your transformation as the guests and the hosts commit to their own transformation, because you can't teach what you haven't learned. You can't take people to a place that you haven't been. So we're all in this together. Okay, well, bringing what is it called? Celestial Moments on a little bit later. I just wanted to, Paul had to leave around 1-ish. And I didn't want to interrupt that flow. But I am so grateful to be surrounded by beautiful, wonderful people who can go with the flow and grow with the flow and just let the line shine through them. And one of them is Celeste Morgan, who I'm not going to bring up until she hears the song. So I know she's ready now. Hey, Celeste, how are you doing?
I am great. And I needed every single word he said. My goodness.
Yes. I know what you mean. This it's a blessing. It's truly a blessing.
My friend. And, you know, I will say this before I start. I have a testimony that is what kind of life coach you are. You help people walk through the shadows. And I walked with you, what was it, like 2 years ago? Yeah. So I'm here doing Celestial Moment because I bust open my shack. I got some other stuff to open up. But I'm happy to say you know most of them, though, don't you, friend? All right, so, good afternoon.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Ade, seriously. All right, family, good afternoon, Universal family. My name is Celeste Morgan, and it is my pleasure to bring you a Celestial Moment. We have a full moon in Leo today. It's Tuesday, February 7th, 2012. Add the date, and you get 2021. Add 2021, and the energy of the day equals 5. This is also the energy for the whole year. Remember, 2012 equals 5. 5 means constant change and improvement, but it also means freedom. Love is freedom. So here we go, family. The 5th letter of the alphabet is E. Words like excitement, eternity, and energy connect us to the divine power of 5. 5 shows up as the bear in medicine cards, which reminds us to stay connected to source through the gift of introspection. 5 also belongs to a goddess of love named Oshun, who loves like honey, reminding of the sweetness of life. 5 is the high priest, the teacher in tarot. Today, the spotlight is on the high priest through the perspective of affirmations for the everyday goddess by Pamela Wells. The everyday goddess reminds that renewal starts with love for self. Give from the overflow as the high priest gives you a place to start creating a personal awareness of the infinite. You can heal your personal history and connect to this infinite source of love, wisdom, and power by recognizing something greater than yourself, by noticing the unexplainable, and by practicing inner silence and prayer. So in this love month, spend some quality time with you. Help someone feel the ground when they look at you, because you've done your inner work and are clear that we need each other because we are each other. All is well, family. And that's the story of 5 through the Everyday Goddess. I'll see you on Wednesday around 1 for another Celestial Moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste Morgan, for Celestial Moment. Appreciate you showing up and living in the grace of each day. Thank you. Life is good. It's getting better. You know, I'm just sitting with the conversation with Paul and his story. He wrote the book just for his children, and the book was sold over 10 million. He was just thinking of publishing 5, 15, and it's been translated into more than 30 languages. People reading it. I mean, it came out a long time ago, I think about 2005. Some of you may have read it or not. If you get a chance, pick it up. It's on the audiobook. His website address, once again, is Wind Rumors, WINDRUMORS.com. You can find out more there. What is the secret that is willing and yearning to burst out? What is the shame that you're holding on about yourself? I love the part, I just love that thing about we can't do it alone. And sometimes we, those of us in a spiritual community, we have a tendency to use spiritual truth to beat each other up. And this is an opportunity for us to really let it go, to allow
space for healing, to allow people to be who they are, to allow people to express their anger. Be that place of love. You know, you can't, that's real healing. There's so much, and I would love to interview Paul Young's wife to hear how she moved through those moments. Paul said that, you know, he was having an affair with his wife's best friend. And the other thing that he didn't get to say that I heard, or I think an interview that I saw about him, was this woman, Kim's, Paul's wife, the woman that Paul was having an affair with, is a woman that Kim has actually spoken to and confided in about the challenges she's experiencing in her marriage. Oh, my God. You talk about breaking open to love. Talk about breaking open and, you know, the vibration where we are. People are talking about we're moving from the third dimension to the fifth dimension. Yeah. Well, all that sounds, that's all intellectual masturbation. It's all great. Spiritual, intellectual, spirituality, that's all great. That's all wonderful. We can all pontificate about, oh, yes, and then, you know, we'll never need this. No, but the real deal is, are we individually, forget collectively, let's just say individually, willing to go through the process of letting go of the shame, of the guilt, of the disappointment, of the feeling like a failure, letting go of all of that so we become the catalyst. We become the catalyst for the fifth dimension. That when people, even if they don't understand what that means, if they don't believe in afterlife, if they don't believe their soul is here for a reason, they're on a soul journey, if they don't believe that there's a physical being, a non-physical being, if they don't believe all the stuff that you believe, can they experience the love, the grace, the joy, the harmony of God, that God is through and as you? That's the real question. We get caught up in personalities and all those other things, but really, that gets washed away after a while. What do you have to offer? Sometimes it's the secret, it's the shame that the world is waiting for that will elevate you to a whole new way of being. A whole new way. If you get a chance, if you haven't, just Google The Shack on YouTube. There's so many interviews there that Paul was done. And just the story of transformation. We all have stuff we're dealing with. I don't care. It's an everyday thing. We all have stuff we're hiding. We all have things we're dealing with, even though sometimes we're trying to outdo each other. I got my, I'm feeling myself. I got my shit together. I'm not even going to say crap. You know, because that's really what it is. We sometimes want to carry, like, we've got our shit together. And then when we pretend we have it, we don't experience the shift. You know, it's time to stop fronting. And I'm talking to myself. And if this touches you, so be it. If this triggers you, so be it. If this resonates with you, so be it. I'm just ready to just blow up that shack. I've been painting it. You know, part of it is broken open, you know, but there's another part I'm trying to say, okay, nobody knows this part of the shack. Let me paint it. Let me keep it up. No, no more. I am freeing myself from myself, and I allow other people to be who they choose to be, because it's really about that. It's about self-forgiveness, self-love, and when we know it, when we experience it, nothing else matters. And joy becomes a constant companion. Ooh, I love that. We'll be back tomorrow with Karen Hager. Is it Hager? Oh, yeah, it is Karen Hager. Let me look in here because I don't like messing people's name up. Yeah, Karen Hager. Now, I hope I'm pronouncing it if it's Hager or Hager, but I guess I have to figure if I'm pronouncing it right. But anyway, welcome, everybody, and thank you for being here. I truly, truly appreciate your love, your commitment to sharing the show. Just your commitment to your own personal growth and transformation, regardless of what drew you here, even if you maybe you read the book, maybe you recognize the name, maybe something told you to listen. I am so grateful that you commit to yourself and that you are listening to that inner guidance, that guidance that will never fail you, that is always there to lead you in the right direction. That's really what it's about. to release everything that is blocking that guidance. We have everything we need to know. We are one with the One. We are one with Source. We are one with God. We are one with the all-knowing consciousness known by so many names. I am so grateful for this platform, for this opportunity to live out loud, and I look forward to being here tomorrow and continuing the conversation. You can always send an email to you can send an email to ask@lifecoachada.com. There it is. Or you can always post your questions on Ask Life Coach at a like page, and we'll get to it. Some people post it in the event page. That's not the best idea, but we get to it too. But if you have any questions and comments, feel free to post it. Or you can go to lifeconversationsmedia.com, lifeconversationsmedia.com, and you can send the your emails through there. I think it's time to release the show. Which song are we going to play? Which song are we going to go out with? I know what it is. Let's see. Okay, a song came to mind, and I'm thinking of doing something else. Don't want to go to Cynthia James. Don't want to do Ricky Byers. Don't want to do Karen. Don't want to do Judy Dexter. I don't know. Let me just scroll here. For those of you who've never those of you who have never seen the switchboard, only when you see it will make sense. But I love you. I bless you. I appreciate you, and I thank God for you. Be love, because that's who you really are. Be true to yourself, and you can set yourself free. And while you're doing all of that, be loved. Allow the love to come back to flow through you. Allow yourself to experience the gift of giving when you allow other people to give to you. Sometimes it's not always easy. I am, Life Coach Ali, I'm a good giver. But sometimes I struggle with receiving. And I'll tell you, the last few weeks, last few days, life is just breaking me down. Like, you are going to receive. It kills me. And now I slowly say yes. This is a song I'm going to play. Let me go back up here. Agape Choir. It just feels right to play that. That's the first song that came to me, but I was trying to play something else. I'm out of here. This is Blessed Always, Agape Choir. You can find out more about them by going to agapelive.com. Agape Live, agapelive.com, and this is Blessed Always. Peace and blessings. I'm out of here.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.